Iowa everywhere.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Take to grow beauty and colors more vibrant. More water, the right sun, nutrients. It takes all of that and more. Like family. At Canoyer Garden Center and Glasshouse Market, family is present in everything we do. Generation after generation, from our family to our employees who make you feel right at home. That's the difference you'll find when you shop Canoyer Garden Center.
Heartland Flags and Gifts presents Legends and Listeners with Scott Docterman and Chad Lystico. Fly 'em high and fly 'em proud. Find your flag at heartlandflags.com. Breaking down the Big Ten from the Channel Seat Studios, this is Iowa Everywhere.
Hey, Hawkeye fans, Big Ten fans, and Iowans everywhere. It is episode 39 of Legends and Listeners live on this Thursday from the Channel Seat Studios on the Iowa Everywhere Network. I am Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register, fresh off a short vacation to the Appalachian Mountains, Scott, and excited to be teaming up with, as usual, with the aforementioned Scott Docterman of The Athletic, who remains on vacation. So, Scott, how's the rest and relaxation going?
Not bad, actually. Just kind of lounging around the house, not doing a whole lot. It's kind of a staycation. But yeah, this is the only extended media that I am doing during this little break. So it's been kind of like every day I've been like, hey, can you jump on and give us 15 minutes? No, not doing any of it. So this is the only one that I'm doing. So I'm happy about that.
All right. Well, we are honored for sure. And legends and listeners, your audience, thank you. The listeners, thank you. And you're the legend, right? No, I'm just kidding. It's a play on words. We're not the legends. All right. Scott, the timing of today's show is quite good, actually, as the Iowa football program has found its quarterback from the NCAA transfer portal. Brendan Sullivan, a guy we talked about last week on our show, is making the jump from Northwestern to Iowa. He seems very excited about it. I wrote about this last night. It's online now at Hawk Central. I think it's a great fit on multiple levels, Scott. Do you agree? And what do you like most about the Sullivan addition?
Yeah, I think of who was out there, who was available, that he was the best one. And, you know, I know we were throwing out a couple other names just for the sake of discussionary purposes, but this was the one that when he hit the portal, you kind of went, oh, okay, you know, keep this one in mind. And when he didn't commit to anywhere else, then that's when I kind of kept thinking, all right, Iowa's got a pipeline here. And then, of course, he visited this week and it turned out well. But what I like about this, Chad, is he's demonstrated an ability to be pass first, but dual threat. And he's played on a comparable stage. He's played in the Big Ten, you know, and he's played at Northwestern, and he's faced Iowa, and he's played a lot of pretty good teams. And he has, you know, a decent record last year, especially when Northwestern was much improved. And completion percentage is one thing that stands out for me the most. And Iowa hasn't had a quarterback hit 60% since Beathard in 2015. And I know I recited that a lot last year when Cade McNamara came about, and then that his completion percentage plummeted by 13 points. But that's another plus for him, is he's completing passes, albeit a little bit different offense, but it was kind of a zone read attack that had some, you know, other elements. So I like this. Chad, kind of take the listeners through what you wrote and what your thoughts are on this one.
Yeah, I think it serves the purposes for exactly what Iowa needs. All right, let's start with the experience and eligibility. I think there's a it would have been a little bit imperfect to maybe bring in a very young, unproven player. It would have filled up your quarterback room, but then you've got, you know, Marco Linez and a young guy competing for that backup spot. It would have been a little bit, it could have thrown off a little bit of the dynamic of the quarterback room if you brought in a one-year guy, because it's like he's got to play now for him. And all of a sudden, it's like Cade McNamara. Not that there's anything wrong with challenging him, but then he's looking over his shoulder. The dynamic maybe isn't exactly what you would want. So I feel like with Brendan Sullivan having exactly 2 years of eligibility, he's got 13 games of experience, 8 starts. He's played Ohio State. He's played Maryland. He started against Iowa twice. Mm-hmm. He's thrown 3 touchdown passes against Iowa. Now his yards per attempt were not great in those games, but Iowa's defense does that to you. And he was not surrounded by talent at all at Northwestern. I mean, arguably similar to what Iowa had. So you can't really put too much stock in some of the numbers. The completion percentage for me is definitely notable. So I just think the natural progression of now you've got McNamara as your one, a guy that could challenge him and unseat him if he really performs well in the Tim Lester offense, is your two. And then Marco Linez gets a year to be the 3, challenge for the number 2 spot. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you know, there's no saying he can't take that jump, but it gives him there's not as much pressure on Marco to take that jump right now, and there's not as much pressure on Tim Lester to, you know, fast track Marco Linez. Mm-hmm. He can mold a guy with experience, a guy he liked at Western Michigan, into his system. And I just feel, and then, you know, James Reasonard, obviously, you know, he's going to be a scout teamer anyway. So it gives you 4 guys. I feel like 4 is a perfect number. You got Jimmy Sullivan, no relation, coming in next year. It's just, it feels like the quarterback room has been reset for me in a really positive way where it doesn't throw off the dynamics. Cade's still your guy, but now you've got a backup plan that you didn't have last year.
Yeah, and he's a Big Ten guy. I mean, he has played in the Big Ten and played well at times. And I like how you set this up, that we're talking about really good overlap in the quarterback room, but there's no direct dynamic. And I think that's really important. As you mentioned, you have a junior with 2 years of eligibility. If he even had 3 years of eligibility, then Marco Linez, you know, could be going, if I don't win this, I'm out. Well, now it gives Marco hope that I can progress in a natural way, and maybe in 2 years I can be the starter, instead of saying, well, if he's a sophomore and he's automatically number 2, then I've got to get out of here or I'm not going to play until maybe my last year. Likewise, though, what I like about this is that, you know, yes, he's somewhat of an insurance policy for Cade McNamara, but I think what I like more is he can be very competitive with Cade McNamara. And there, with this offense, the way it performed last year, even when Cade McNamara was healthy, I think they should just go on best player. Now, the default is Cade McNamara is the starting quarterback. That's perfectly fine. But in camp, other than rust, if Cade doesn't perform very well, or if he's just average and Brendan Sullivan looks like the better player, play him. There's no problem with that. He deserves that. And then, as you said, with Marco, he doesn't have to be fast-tracked to the point where he's uncomfortable and not ready. He was not ready last year. The unfortunate part was they needed him to be ready, and he wasn't. He couldn't be. And Deacon Hill, of course, is out, and I don't know where he'll end up, but he's certainly not here. And so I think overall, it's a really good move for Iowa, that if nothing else, he's your number 2 and nobody feels threatened. But if he's your number 1, there's nothing wrong with that either. That means he's the best quarterback on the roster.
Yeah. One thing I put in my column, which thank you for referencing that, was suddenly you feel, okay, you look at the schedule and, you know, August 31st against Illinois State, always felt like, you know, a great warm-up game. But week two, you've got Iowa State. It's going to be a really good team, probably one of the, I'm guessing, one of the favorites in the Big 12. Very competitive game. I'm guessing the spread will be close to a push, like it always is. But suddenly now it's, I feel like, you know, Cade, it's not great. Like, if Cade pulls a quad on Kids Day, all of a sudden it's not like, oh my God, panic. You know, this season's in jeopardy already because you got Iowa State week two and another tough game week four. And you've got a backup plan. Like, you just didn't have that last year. And that's why there was such breathless coverage of Cade after he, you know, strained, tore the quad. It's like, oh God, is he going to be, how long is he going to be out? And of course he made it back in time to play, but he wasn't himself. So, it just, so again, if he's not himself, you've got a guy that can bridge that gap until he is himself, you know, if he gets that injury. So it's just, you have to have that. That was the whole, you know, I know Brad Heinrichs was, you know, like, why is everyone so panicked about a backup quarterback? But this is why, because you have to have, we saw last year, yes, they won 10 games, but there's zero chance you can replicate last year's plans. So that's, I feel like that it just offers so much comfort. He's not like the greatest quarterback on earth, obviously, but it just gives you comfort going into the season now.
You want somebody you feel like you can go in and complete passes and move the ball and score points. You know, it doesn't have to be 35 points. That would be great, but somebody who could get you to 20. Because if Iowa can get to 20, they're at least winning, I don't know, 10 games, 9 games at minimum in the Big Ten.
They need to score more than 20 a game.
But what I'm saying is, at any singular game.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, if they could get to 20, they win 9 to 10 games.
Yeah, 9. I'll give them 9.
And then there's going to be a couple the offense has to win, and then there's at least one that I think it'll be a challenge to win no matter how good they play. But you look at their week one, yes, you know, you don't want to overlook anybody, but that is your preseason game. You know, that's Illinois State. That's a game that you feel like your defense should shut them down completely, and your offense gets a chance to kind of work out the kinks. Games 2 through 4 are going to be a challenge. Iowa State, as you said, Iowa State may be the – I don't know. They may be the second best team on Iowa's schedule. I mean, they're really good. I was kind of surprised they haven't been on any preseason top 25 year rankings yet, because I think this might be one of Matt's better teams, at least since the year they went to the Fiesta Bowl. And then Troy is pretty, you know, was really good last year. Now, I haven't checked to see who left the portal, who's coming in, blah, blah, blah. But they were good in multiple facets, not just offense or defense. It was both. And then you look at Minnesota. At Minnesota, it's a rivalry game. They've got the pig. And, you know, that's a big deal. So I think, you know, this gives you that opportunity, as you said, Chad. I mean, if you're talking about Deacon Hill, there's not a lot of hope there. There's been a lot of anxiety attached to Iowa's offense for several years now. And that's why Brad or whoever has been, you know, why is everybody freaking out? Because there's nothing good that's happened on offense for a long time. You know, I mean, even last year, it's like, okay, we got a quarterback. Oh, but he's coming off an injury. Oh, he strained his quad. I know, I almost slipped there. Ow, that would really be a pain.
Okay, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, all right. No,
we're not talking about General Booty here.
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah, he's not coming either. That'd be a pain in the ass for Dolph. But then there's but then you look at the injuries last year, not only to Cade, but then the tight ends, the line didn't block real well. They were fighting through injuries. And then, you know, the Brian Ferentz thing was just an anxiety, anger, vitriolic situation for the fan base for a long time. And now that's over. Now you've got a backup. Now you've got, you know, everybody's going to complain because that's what they do. That's what they enjoy. But it's still, you've got some, the half the fan base now can exhale a little bit, at least until, you know, third and five in, on the first series.
Well, the weather is getting nicer here in Iowa and the wind does keep blowing. And what better opportunity to use that constant wind to your advantage than seeing a crisp flag flapping with your favorite team's logo? You can make the vision happen by visiting Heartland Flags and Gifts, which carries nearly every sport, every team, and every flag. Visit our friends online at heartlandflags.com or in store at 3719 Southwest 9th Street here in Des Moines, where I live. Let's talk a little bit more about that schedule, Scott, because Iowa's over-under win total remains 7.5 from the last I checked. And I feel like this schedule just really unfolds nicely now that you've got with the two quarterbacks here in place. I mean, I don't know. Is there... I feel like Iowa would be favored in maybe 9-10 of these games. Illinois State, Iowa State, Troy, at Minnesota. Iowa State, the toughest one there. Minnesota, tricky for sure. Off week at Ohio State. Washington, at Michigan State. Northwestern at home. Wisconsin at home. At UCLA, complete rebuild. I should have mentioned Washington, complete rebuild. Off week at Brian Ferentz and Maryland. Home against Nebraska. I mean, I feel like... Scott, I don't feel like this. It's a stretch to say Iowa should be a playoff contender.
I think we can enter the season saying Iowa should be a playoff contender. I do believe that's the case. What I will caution against is with teams like Iowa and Iowa specifically, in the past, when Iowa goes 1 year where everything bounces right for them and they win games. That last year, a 10-win team without an offense. It didn't even have an offense that lined up. And yet won 10 games and won the division. It tends to even out the other direction, meaning there were a lot of close games that went in Iowa's favor, except for the Minnesota game. This year has the potential to bounce in the other direction if the offense doesn't materialize in the right way, or if injuries hurt defense. And you know, what we'll say is you take the first four, and I'm not going to try to, you know, pop the balloons here on anything, but Iowa State is an even matchup right now on paper. Iowa State has a really good defense. Iowa has one of the best defenses in the country. Iowa State has a much better offense than Iowa does right now. However, they're coming to Iowa City, but they won the last time they were here. That to me is a coin flip game. I would say Iowa's probably going to be a 3-point favorite just because of the home field advantage. Troy is one of those teams where Iowa should win. However, if you struggle, they've got enough players that they can beat you. Going to Minnesota, on my confidence level, I'm probably high on Iowa winning that game, specifically because of last year and going up there. At Ohio State, I'm not very positive about Iowa winning at Ohio State. I think that could be a real challenge, to say the least. I think they're the best team in the country. Washington at Iowa, I would say that to me looks like an Iowa win, because teams like that come to Iowa City tend to die, you know, tend to lock the doors. It's a steel cage fight, and this is what happens. At Michigan State, Iowa should be better. Michigan State has 47 guys in the portal since Mel Tucker got fired. But, you know, how do they coalesce? I don't know. Northwestern at Iowa, that's interesting because they played really well last year and nobody thought that they would have a chance of going to a bowl game or even winning like three games after Fitz got canned. But, you know, they played well at Kinnick. There's no doubt about that. Wisconsin at Iowa, you know, that's, you know, it depends on what you see out of Wisconsin, I think, at this point. I mean, if this is the old Wisconsin, I would say it'd be very, very difficult. At UCLA, I look at UCLA and I say, Maryland of the West, but they're kind of starting over.
Yeah, Iowa finally wins in the Rose Bowl, Scott.
Yeah. First Rose Bowl win since Evie, yes. Kirk and, you know, the sundown on the San Gabriel Mountains, yeah. and there it is on his career. And then at Maryland, you know, that's the time of year where Maryland kind of falters a little bit. And then finally Nebraska at home. So I look at the schedule, Chad, probably the same way you do, and say, there's a lot to like. There's a lot of opportunity here. But if things don't work out well, there's a lot of opportunity for a lot of 3 and 5 point losses.
Yeah, well put. And I think to bring it back to our quarterbacks conversation and the Tim Lester offense, Scott, I think it all comes back to how that performs. And one, so I wanted to ask you, how do you feel like Brendan Sullivan fits with his style of play in the Tim Lester offense? Another thing I touched on in my column was just how this kind of adds to the progression of athletic, more mobile quarterbacks that Iowa is introducing to its system. Cade McNamara, suddenly the least mobile of them all, and he's not like immobile. He can move. He's just not a running quarterback. But Brendan Sullivan certainly is capable of running, 6'3", 225, but has most of his games had 20-plus rushing yards, even with the sacks. Mm-hmm. So that gives you – and we saw him run a bunch at Wrigley Field last year and also get crunched a lot by Jay Higgins and Sebastian Castro and Xavier Wampa, I believe. He took a beating from the Hawks, and I don't think he played again after that game. But what I'm saying, but then you add Marco Linez, Jimmy Sullivan, these are all guys that can move. James Rezar. I apologize for leaving James out there. Sub 1100 yard dashes, 100 meter dashes. You're seeing a trend, which I like. We've been calling for this for a long time. I remember writing a column after the failed Nate Stanley 2-point conversion. Like, you got to start getting mobile. You got to get guys that can make off schedule plays, Scott. Mm-hmm. That can make those 3rd and 5s that Iowa is in the last several years has been terrible at getting. 3rd and 3, 3rd and 5. Let make those plays. A lot of times that needs to be the quarterback with his legs. Anyway. I feel like, how does he fit? And that's the trend I see, I guess. And I feel like that fits into what Tim Lester likes in his quarterbacks.
Well, it's kind of funny, Chad, because a lot of Iowa fans will look back fondly at Brad Banks, and why wouldn't you? And it's like, hey, that worked. Let's never do that again. That's kind of been the Iowa philosophy on quarterback. And then they went more statue-esque for a few times in a row. With Spencer, with Nate Stanley, and they had really good arms. But that collision was unreal, by the way, in 2019, and 2 points away from going to overtime and maybe winning the division, and that was a decent enough team that I think it could have competed in Indianapolis. But what I like about this is, you've got a quarterback who in his time at Northwestern has rushed for more than 250 yards, plus, that means that's still counting sacks as,
And his old line sucked.
So. Yeah, right. So he's actually a legitimate runner. And when you're going to do, RPOs and then transition, a lot of times you got to transition to a run yourself in a zone read. And because people are following it. And that's why the zone read never really worked in Iowa, because nobody believed the quarterback would actually run it. And now you have that. And then you also have you look at his career completion percentage of nearly 69%. That means he's accurate. And they run a lot of zone read and RPOs at Northwestern the last couple of years. So I think that's why he fits into this scheme. And that's why I think Iowa's in a good position now. Is he going to be the savior? I don't know. I don't think so. But let's face it, other than, Nate had some really good statistics and a lot of good touchdown passes, 68 of them, which at the time was like 13th in Big Ten history. But I don't think anybody ever came away other than a few games thinking, wow, this guy's really good. Which it was unfortunate because he was. Beathard was the last one that I think people could say was good. He's still in the NFL. So there's a reason for that. I don't know if he fits in this category. Does he? Can he be in that category? Can he be Jake Rudock?
Rudock was a little bit more mobile than people gave him credit for.
And there was a lot of times when I said, if Jake Rudock was on the 2020 team, that team's in the playoff.
Yeah.
They're that good. What about you? What do you think?
Well, I think it's what Lester wants. You go back to his spring press conference. He's an advocate for that. And so guys that can make a conversion with his legs. And so And he recruited him out of Western Michigan. So, again, that goes back to kind of what you said about things are pretty quiet with Brendan Sullivan, and maybe there was a reason for that. Maybe there was a kind of a thought process all along. And obviously Northwestern now with a kind of hotshot new offensive coordinator from South Dakota State.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of want to carve your own path, and maybe Brendan did not see himself in that future. So personally for him, I think it's a good fit too, because it gives him a chance to continue to potentially be a Big Ten starter. If not this year, then certainly has a good chance in 2025. Mm-hmm. And you probably expect that at this point. And it kind of solves also that recruiting. You don't have to worry about the position unless you lose somebody. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about that position right now for a little while, finally, potentially. Mm-hmm. So here, somebody, kind of friend of the program, messaged me on Twitter and asked this question. What would the over-under be for Brendan Sullivan starts for Iowa in 2024? Let's take regular season games. I'm going to set the over-under, Scott, at 2.5. Would you take the over or under on Brendan Sullivan starts? And what does that tell us about this quarterback situation?
I will take the over simply because Cade McNamara's played in 8 games the last 2 years. Last year, we saw him take off twice. One, it resulted in a torn quad, and the other an ACL. Now, if he can come back healthy and not have any issues, then he's probably the better quarterback at this time. Certainly has a better resume. But, you know, those are 2 really important times. I mean, he didn't really have any time to really practice other than a week and a half or 2 weeks before that, before the quad. And then he was just finally starting to get healthy when it was his other leg that gave out. And then he also had, you know, knee surgery, meniscus tear and everything previously. So I would go over on 2.5 on this, you know, and then prove me wrong. But what do you think?
Well, I think that's that would be the smart play. I almost set it at 3.5 just to kind of stoke the conversation a little more, but there's a lot of ways it could go over. I mean, performance potentially even. I mean, we don't know, you know, even Spencer Lee coming off 2 knee surgeries, you know, as great as he was, didn't win a national title as a senior. And, you know, and just it's hard to come back from a double knee surgery on both knees, which Spencer did all at once for him. But essentially, that's what Cade's dealing with here. So now the softball videos look good, look encouraging. Yeah. Looks like Cade's moving around well. And I feel optimistic that he is going to be full strength in June and that they have slow played his recovery, which has been smart. And I know people are bent out of shape about Deacon Hill taking the one reps, but as we sit here right now on May, whatever it is, 9th, like I feel good about the way Iowa has handled the quarterback situation. You know, Marco got the 2 and 3 reps just like he's going to get this summer, you know, and all the other guys got the 1 reps that they needed with a guy that could help make the trains move on time, even if the passes weren't accurate, you know.
Exactly.
You got your reps in. So anyway, I come away from this week feeling very good. Not great, but very good about Iowa's quarterback situation going into 2024. And that for me was the biggest question mark, Scott. And now we're going to get into a roster breakdown. But first, we have a new sponsor.
Yes.
Iowa Everywhere.
You heard it coming in here. Knoyer Garden Center. It's time to plant, grow, and love with Knoyer Garden Center. Knoyer Garden Center has the best annuals, perennials, hanging baskets, and so much more to bring the color and beauty of the season to your home. Stop the family-owned Knoyer Garden Center, where nearly everything they sell is locally grown too. 2 locations, Grimes near Toyota of Des Moines on Highway 141, and in Ankeny, right at the corner of, you're going to have to pronounce this, Olabor and Ankeny Boulevard. So gift certificates are always available at KnoyerGardenCenter.com, and their glasshouse gift market has a tremendous selection of great gifts and home accents to shop.
All right. If you want to jump on, Aiden, and tell us the pronunciation, Oralabor, I don't know. I don't live in Ankeny.
I always heard Oralabor.
Oralabor. That makes labor. Sense. That makes sense.
Okay.
So my wife and I have been to the Grimes location. It is awesome. I texted her today and I said, hey, is this, what do you think of this place? She said, it's great. So we've been to the Grimes one. It is pretty expansive. Like they have a ton of stuff. So we appreciate their sponsorship of Iowa Everywhere, Legends and Listeners. And I mean, this is the time to plant. Like Mother's Day is the time in Iowa when you want to be planting. So get out there. Thank you, Scott, for that read. And we got, we want to talk about the whole roster now. Now that things have kind of settled, now the QB is settled. I wouldn't say everything is settled, but now the QB is settled, Scott. Let's start with the where are the most worrisome areas on this Hawkeye football roster? For you, we'll get to the strengths, but where are you still a little bit concerned about this Iowa roster?
No question, it's wide receiver. I mean, when you lose Jacob Bostic and then he somehow ends up at Texas A&M without playing really a snap in 2 years, first of all, it's like, wow, that's quite a nice landing spot. But two, what else do you have? I mean, you have a handful of snaps from Caleb Brown, who is like, is he good or is he just good relatively, you know, to what you have? Seth Anderson had some moments, you know, first catch of the year. Then what? Then you look at everybody else going, that's to me the biggest. Now that backup quarterback at minimum was solved, wide receiver remains the biggest question mark across the board.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, and I think I feel okay about it if everybody's healthy, but we've seen this position struggle to stay healthy. I like Caleb Brown. I think he's a potential, I don't want to say star in the making, but a potential number one receiver. It seems like Tim Lester has hit on something with Caden Weachin. Mm-hmm. That could be fool's gold, who knows, but he is very fast. He's faster than Cooper DeJean. they want to get him the ball in space, and that's smart. That's not something that Brian Ferentz did except for a few jet sweeps, which he didn't run enough of. So so we'll see on Caden Weachin. And Seth Anderson, like you said, just has not stayed healthy, but I like what he, you know, I like him on paper. You know, but he's been fragile so far, hasn't made it, you know, has barely participated in spring practice either of his 2 years on campus, and then was kind of a non-factor after early in the season last year. I liked what we saw, Scott, from Dayton Howard. Jarrett Bowie to me looks like a player, but I feel like they got to bring someone else in, don't they? Don't they need to bring one more in from the portal in this period? I feel like that would be the next focus for me.
Absolutely, because I look at what they have, and Chad, I'm probably only sold, even among a rotational basis, I'm probably only sold on Caleb Brown and Caden Weegan, you know, as being rotational guys for sure. I think Seth Anderson should be in there, but, you know, as you said, he hasn't been healthy in any of the springs. You know, last year he was inconsistent. Now everybody was inconsistent last year once the injury started happening across the board. But so I think I could put Seth in there at number three. Who's next? Mm-hmm. You know, we're going with guys who had redshirts. you know, and then you talk about, you know, what's the difference between Jarrett Bowie and Rhys VanderZee? Well, not much, you know. I mean, neither of them have played in the college game, you know. I mean, Bowie has, I guess. He's got a couple of
snaps,
but nothing much. So, yes, I do believe that they should go to the portal, try to get an X receiver, somebody with college experience catching passes, and whether that is a true scholarship. I mean, they're at 88 right now. It's manageable. Whether that's a scholarship guy or that's a walk on with, you know, benefits, something like that. You know, Alec Wick is probably somebody that they could rely on as a rotation. I mean, with this receiving core, Chad, and without it being really established, I would say they probably need six in this style of offense. And right now I see 2 to 3 that I'm really confident in. So I think they need to bring in one more guy from the outside just to feel like, you know, and it can be mitigated, of course, by tight end, which it would be, but it does need a healthy dose of 5 to 6 receivers on a frequent basis, because they're gonna be running a go route pretty much on every single RPO.
Yeah, and we do. I should have mentioned Terrell Washington Jr. too. It seems like he is transitioning to that room. Hopefully, it looked like he had some juice to him, and I feel like that can help. But again, this is all projection. You don't want to, for a team that's potentially contending for a playoff berth, you don't want to be projecting at such a critical position. So that certainly, I agree, is top worry. I feel like we've talked a lot about defensive tackle. We know that is probably the other top worry right now. And I don't know, do you think they'll add anybody in the portal there? I know Kelvin Bell, you know, has been looking. I know they offered at least one guy. You feel like they're going to get anyone there, or are they going to ride it out?
I think if the fit is right and the money's right, then I think they can. But other than that, I think they're not in horrible shape there. I think you would like to add one more, you know, because I feel like looking at their depth, you're going to be plugging in walk-ons at a position where you've kind of moved away from that. You know, 10 years ago, that was kind of the norm. Over the last 5 to 6, 7 years, it's been more, let's get as many dudes out there. And that's what's really fueled the difference in Iowa's defense, has been the play up front, that they've been able, instead of going 5 or 6 deep, that now they're going 8 or 9. And it's allowed them to really, you know, be fresher and win these games. So I see right now on defensive tackle, and you tell me what you think, as two legitimate dudes, NFL caliber dudes, and Aaron Graves and YA Black. I see Jeremiah Pittman. Can he take the next step like Noah Shannon did, you know, back in 2020-ish, 2021, where he was kind of like, he's pretty good. I think he can, but that's going to add another 15 or so snaps a game. After that, okay, now you're throwing in – right now you're throwing in walk-ons over your scholarship guys, which is scary. You know, they did it before with, like, Sam Brinks, and he did all right, but you want – there's a reason why you put him on scholarship, you know. So I think that's – I wouldn't be surprised if they walk away with one more dude to do that.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, as – you know, like the loss of Antonio Thompson was not ideal, because he was the perfect type of guy, like limited snaps, but a lot of energy in those snaps, type of guy you need there. So I'm just brainstorming, like maybe they move Deontay Craig inside for 5 to 8 snaps a game, kind of like they did with Lucas Van Ness. You know, I'm not saying he's on the same level as Van Ness, but we have seen him line up inside. And do they still call it the Raider package? I don't know if they do, but
there's Raider, and then there's one that's kind of more of a NASCAR package.
Yeah.
And this was perfected, when you think about it, back when they would bring in AJ Epenesa off the bench, and you move Parker Hesse inside and Chauncey Golston inside, and you had Anthony Nelson. I mean, first of all, three dudes are, you know, NFL heavy NFL guys. Well, Parker too, for that matter, he's not on a roster now, but they were able to do that. I could see that being part of it. I did see a little bit of it. I'd have to find my notes from the spring game where they did move Deontay inside on pass rush situations, and that's where a Brian Allen can step in and become more of a contributor, because or Ethan Herkic go inside because he's just such a madman, you know, a furious guy, you know, up front.
I like that. Yep.
Yeah. And then you start to look at, is there anybody else that you could adjust in a role for to make up for that, which is maybe there's a linebacker that you could blitz off the edge, you know, stand up pass rusher in certain situations, 8 snaps a game, something like that.
I got plenty of linebackers.
Yeah. And it might be one of the newbies, you know, if you think about it, you know, because you got, you know, I mean, Buffington and Weisskopf are just off the charts athletic. Mm-hmm. And Preston Reese reminds me so much of Josie Jewell and his mannerisms and toughness. It's just eerie. So I can see a Cam Buffington or Derek Weisskopf. It's like, hey, this year we're just going to stand you up and you're going to blitz on third down. And that's not a, you know, learn how to fight with your hands a little bit and you're all right. So that's how they would overcome it. But I could still see him adding somebody.
All right. So I know we're going a little long here, but, you know, it's fun to have football discussion. And we'll probably just like recycle some of this discussion later when we talk, when we get into June and July.
Yeah.
But let's just kind of look at the strengths right now as you see it. Like whatever you want to say, if it's position group, if it's whatever, where do you feel the best about this Hawkeye team positionally or position group or personnel?
I think the back 7 is maybe the best in college football. No, I don't say that lightly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at even losing Cooper DeJean, which is a heck of a loss, but Sebastian Castro is maybe a 3rd-round guy. Xavier Wampa, if he takes that step, is maybe a borderline 1st-rounder. Quinn Schulte is your salt of the earth Iowa guy. You know, you've got corner Jamari Harris, who I really believe is going to take a jump. I think he just looks the part to me to be that really good senior story, long arms, athletic, does what, you know, it's just, he's had such a weird trajectory to his career that I think this is the time to take it off. And then it's about finding that extra, you know, who's going to be that corner. And as much as we've seen now about Nestor or Deshaun Lee, TJ Hall, they seem like they've got a lot of players. So I really like that. And of course at linebacker, specifically with Higgins and Jackson, I think they're set. But I honestly believe that between, you know, the triangle of Higgins, Wampa, and Castro are just about as good as any trio in the back 7 in the country.
Yeah, and it's still hard to believe that Nick Jackson came, you know, able to come back and did come back. So no disputes there. I mean, it's hard to lose Cooper DeJean and feel great, but it seems like Nestor was one of the biggest risers of spring ball. So starting to feel a little more comfort there as well. And they got plenty of options at cash right now in case anything were to happen to Castro. And, you know, Lutmer at safety. Mm-hmm. So they're like loaded at safety right now, especially when Cohen Entringer comes back.
Yeah.
So yeah, no question. The depth is there. The talent is there. And so you just got to make plays. And one discussion I want to have later in the summer with you, Scott, is whether Iowa's defense maybe was, I don't know, like maybe better than like statistically better than it really was in a way, because teams knew they didn't have to do much against Iowa. You know what I mean? Like a Penn State, for example, they just kind of like took 5 yards at a time for 3 hours. You know, could they have done more? Kind of like maybe a Tennessee or a Michigan tried to. I don't know. But I don't know. Further discussion. But
I'll just say really quick, because you dinged me on this one, was Penn State, best game they played all year offensively, and it wasn't close. They played their game to perfection that night, and they were very motivated for that game. So, you know, we don't need to rehash it because they only had the ball for 50 out of the 60 minutes, but it was
true,
you know, but that was the best game Drew Aller ever played too.
Yeah. 4 TDs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was that'd be a good one to rewatch sometime. 13 minutes time of possession. God, yeah. Dang, I can't even.
With Cade McNamara, with Eric All.
Yeah.
So that's why we got to be careful about some of this going forward.
Yeah. I feel, obviously, this is probably a no-brainer, but I feel great about tight ends. Mm-hmm. I think you've got the 1-2 punch that basically you would have had last year. You got Luke Lachey and Addison Estrenga. I wouldn't go – I mean, I would fold in a third guy here and there, but I would just lean on those two guys. They prove they're capable of it. I think Lachey looks dynamic. He looks great. He's back to himself. So definitely feel great about that. And running backs, you know, that you've got the bodies there. Can't believe no one transferred. Mm-hmm. You got a luxury there. And I feel like Tim Lester, we heard a little bit more about, you know, throwing to the running backs. That was something that Iowa did not do a great job of, the screen game, you know, that, you know, feel like an NFL team does, which the Tim Lester influence is, you know, you think about Shanahan offense, they get it to their running backs, you know, whether it's Aaron Jones in Green Bay or Christian McCaffrey in San Francisco. I mean, they get their running backs involved in the passing game. So I feel like that's going to be a staple as well of the Lester offense. And I think it needs to be.
Mm. I had a lot of fun writing about 14 personnel early in the season, Chad, when Luke Lachey was there and Eric All, and then a couple other times throughout the season. But that really was maybe one of the worst decisions that was ever made grouping wise, because it completely neutered the wide receiver group and it did nothing for the running backs other than run the ball up the middle and, you know, occasionally get the ball out to these tight ends. I'd really like the tight ends. I think that the top two, I think Ortworth might be something too. You know, it's too bad what Johnny Jacuzzi, I think, hit the portal, but I understand why. He's, you know, even on a normal year, he'd probably be third receiver or tight end on this roster. And I really like the running backs. I think that there's four capable, and then not counting the incoming guys, you know, your guy from ADM, you know, Brevin Dole. I think he's got a really good opportunity. And then, you know, the one group that it's strange how I'm not sure what to think about right now.
I know what you're going to say.
O-line, baby, you know, because they are veteran. I mean, there's what, like 155 career starts among this group. They didn't play very well last year. Now, did they not play well because of the way they were schemed and hurt, or did they not play very well because they're not very good? And I think it's in the middle, not to murky it up too much here, Chad, but I don't think that it's full of great NFL talent, but I also think they're better than what they show. And I think they're more capable. And that usually leads to good things when guys are entering their final year. If they stay healthy, I expect big things out of Connor Colby, Logan Jones, Mason Richmond. You know, does that mean they're going to be All-American? No, but it might mean that one of them might be all Big Ten. I think that's the possibility for a Connor Colby to come out kind of like, and I'm dating myself here, but like Seth Olsen in 08, where all of a sudden it's like, this line sucks. This line sucks. And then I've never seen a team more, even last year in open scrimmages, I've never seen a team more beaten down in a kids' day practice than 08, when that defense annihilated Sean Green. He didn't even get a yard that day. And then Sean Green goes on. He's the Doak Walker Award winner. And by the end of the year, Iowa was dominating the entire Big Ten up front. I don't know that I see that much potential in this group, but I also see a lot of parallels. So let's just say I think they got a chance to be a better unit.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with Tim Lester. You know, he's got a lot of pressure on him to produce right away, which is hard to do as a first-year O coordinator. But from what we've heard, you know, he's getting the numbers game more in the O-line's favor. That's where I think the offensive line looked worse than it really was because you were playing against stacked boxes and your quarterback couldn't move.
How was kickoff, you know?
it's just mind-boggling to think about just not changing and not, you know, not trying something else. I don't know. Not to re-legislate the past, but it just feels like that has changed. The motions, expansive motions up front. You know, trying to, you know, uncork a big run or two. And if you can do that, we saw that at Wisconsin last year. When Iowa did get a big run, that was a difference maker. And maybe it sounds like this old line is blocking better up front. So anyway, Well, any last thoughts on football before we move on?
Yeah, I guess I look at this and I think of this is the strategy that still continues. It baffled me then, and it'll baffle me forever, is that Iowa's blocking style is predicated on run and hit. It's get vertical, move, and then displace movement through your vertical movement. And yet they play bunch the whole time. They're a bunch formation, which is more gap, power, bully ball with three Wisconsin bully ball. And they couldn't figure it out. It's like spread people out. Use your athletic ability, get to these people and allow your running backs to run free instead of, you know, if you're going to bunch everybody up, then hell, make everybody 350 pounds to do that. And then you can power them and move them and do that. It's like, what are you thinking? You know? So anyway, I could rant a lot, you know, on what we saw. And I think last year, last couple of years, I won't say I was like politically correct or anything. I was trying to find ways to say, I think this can kind of work, even if I didn't agree with it. And I told Brian that a few times, but now it's like, I can't hold back anymore. There's so much, Chad. Oh my God.
Sounds like another podcast for another time. Vacation is a great time to reach for a glass of Steeple Ridge Bourbon, Scott. Steeple Ridge delivers a high-quality, delicious drinking, award-winning craft bourbon. If you don't find Steeple Ridge at your favorite retailer, ask for it by name. Steeple Ridge, distilled, aged, and bottled in Erling, Iowa by Lonely Oak Distillery. WNBA, Scott, is almost here. Caitlin Clark effect still taking place. Potentially charter flights instead of coach. It has to be like inspired by Caitlin Clark. Like Caitlin Clark and coach, that's just not going to happen. That's not going to go over. Like that's not, like you need like three rows of security, you know, to make that work. Anyway, it's just I'm seeing this. Like I'm talking to people all around, like everywhere I go, like, hey, you know, we watched the Fever exhibition game. We can't wait for the next one. Mm-hmm. Hey, have you heard about Kate Martin? Man, I can't wait to watch the Las Vegas Aces. Do you think Kate Martin's going to make the roster? Like, it's awesome. It's awesome to see. I'm excited to see how this continues to go, but I have no doubt that this WNBA season is going to be like more watched than anything that league has seen before. And I still don't think the whole league understands what's coming yet.
Yeah, you're right. Wait till tonight with the preseason game in Indianapolis and wait for the New York Liberty playing, you know, Sabrina Ionescu playing against Ionescu playing against Caitlin Clark and some of this stuff. You're seeing games getting moved from the mid-level arenas to the major NBA arenas. It's amazing. You know, the Caitlin Clark effect is real. It always has been. And people are finally starting to figure it out, you know, and what's bugging me about this, Chad, is that there is some significant gatekeeping by the old guard of the WNBA, whether it's the players or even the fans, who will condescendingly send out email or tweets or whatever and say, for those of you who are new to the WNBA, here's some players you should check up on. So just so you know about this league, you know, and it's like, write down Cheryl Swoops and Brenda Stewart and all this stuff. Like, really, you want to make fun of everybody who is now finally doing what you wanted all along, which is make your league relevant and interesting. So I look at this as it's not. And the weird thing is, it's not just Caitlin. Caitlin is the star, but like Angel Reese playing the other day.
Chicago,
with the Chicago Sky. And it wasn't on TV and there were thousands of complaints about that. And then somebody streamed that game on their phone and ends up getting, you know, massive.
Millions of views, right?
Right. That's yeah.
Millions of views. Yeah.
So that's where this league is heading. And people were saying, and I'm interested to hear what you have to think about this, Chad, is people were complaining about the timing of the league. And I always said the exact opposite. It's the best time for the league because what else are you going to watch now? You know, yeah. Major League Baseball is, I'm a Cubs fan, but, you know, it's just kind of there. What else? NBA playoffs, okay, but that's married to, you know, this kind of basketball. NHL, it's a niche sport. Sorry, people like it or you don't care. Mm-hmm. And so I look at this as perfect timing. You capitalized on the momentum from the women's basketball tournament. Now they're going into the season, and now you've got this opportunity. So I think it's fantastic. And I'm like you, places I go, people aren't asking me, you know, will Logan Lee make the roster? Will Joe Evans make the roster? You're asking about Kate Martin,
right?
You know, did she make it? You know, is now that they're down to 12, you know, so that's, it's really awesome.
Yeah. No, I totally concur with you. I just think that, you know, we saw it happen probably over 2 years, mostly the end of her sophomore year is when her buzz started to build, but we really saw it on the ground as in her Caitlin's junior year kind of really grow to the point where there were, you know, growing crowds. And then obviously the senior year was off the charts, and we'll see what the, if the WNBA kind of, I don't know what level it's going to reach, but I think it's already kind of like, it's almost reaching that back end of Caitlin's junior year where people are like, the numbers are kind of exploding quickly, almost like a stock market type thing where it's like buy, buy, buy. And like people are tuning in, and now, gosh, perfect timing for, like you said, I mean, there's nothing on right now. I mean, there's like, I watch NASCAR, but still that's only on Sundays. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to soak it in. I really never have. I'm not afraid to admit that. But now I'm going to. And I'm going to be watching the Las Vegas Aces, especially if Kate Martin makes it. I don't know if she'll play much, but she is in the final 12. It doesn't mean she's made the roster. That we got to go to like May 13th for the final roster. But it seems like she's on a good track. And what a smart move, too. I mean, honestly, like, that's a great franchise from what I'm learning more about. And brilliant to take a player like that. You can't have 12 stars anyway. So like, take a player like that, who's a unifying player, a good player, can do anything you ask of her, and she's going to draw in fans. She is. It's not just Caitlin. And I think that's the other part of this that we all realized here in Iowa, that it wasn't just Caitlin. It was everybody. She started it. She ignited the fire. But everybody became part of that fire, and that's what the whole, what's gonna happen to the whole WNBA. All these other players that are complaining, whining, they're gonna become more popular if they just play the game,
yeah.
And stop criticizing Caitlin. You're starting to see people backpedal too on the Caitlin criticism that they started out with, like a Taurasi or a Swoops or whatever. So, it's exciting. I'm pumped for it. I know my parents are pumped. Like they were trying to like stream the Fever game on their phone with the WNBA app. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty impressive, you know? And
we bought the app for the season. My wife wants to watch it. My dad watched it, and he's always been just football and racing. And I just laughed because, you know, all those years I covered men's basketball on the road, I don't think he ever watched one game, but now he can't not watch it. He's just like, this is the best. And my father-in-law, you know, bought the app, and then he's struggling to get it on. So we're on FaceTime trying to show him exactly how to do this. And that's what's great about it. And that's what the WNBA should embrace. And I think, again, some of the fans and a few of the old guard that are gatekeeping, like, oh, but you know, you're a new fan. You know, I heard Diana Taurasi kind of under her breath when people were talking about her criticisms, like, shh, these new fans, you know, it's like, you got to embrace this, man. You can't just live in the past where all you did was complain because nobody didn't watch you. And we're important. You're getting charter flights now. You know, there's 17 games are going to be shown in Iowa over the air because of the Caitlin Clark effect. And as you said, with Kate Martin, that's what good teams do. You cannot have, you know, whether it's in baseball, football to an extent, you could probably have more, but basketball and baseball, especially, you've got to have somebody who's
the clubhouse
willing,
guy, right?
Yeah. Somebody who's willing to go and take, you know, hey,
the Jason Hayward, you know, Jason Hayward,
the sack, you know, sacrifice, the second, take out the you're running, you're not going to get it, you know, you're not going to get to second, but you take out the shortstop trying to make the double play throw. And in basketball, you know, I'm the glue, as they say. And that's what Kate Martin is. By the way, Ray Gun, downtown Iowa City is still slammed with Iowa women's basketball stuff, and only a little bit of Bears. They have a blue navy and orange punting is winning shirt now for Tory, but really nothing else.
Yeah, we were maybe going to talk a little men's basketball, kind of ran out of time, but that's cool. We'll get to it. It's a long summer, and like you said, there is some other, you know, Iowa women's basketball transfer portal searching going on, yeah, potentially. So we'll hit that maybe on a future show, but just a lot of excitement still with women's basketball, and I'm pumped to watch it, rooting for, you know, I can root for these former Hawkeyes now, mm-hmm, that we got to know Kate and Caitlin and Megan Gustafson on the, yeah, Aces.
Absolutely.
Kia Stokes from your
yes,
network. Yeah, also, yeah, on Aces. So
right,
pretty exciting time, Scott.
Yeah, it is. And that's the good thing. You know, it's wonderful to see, you know, and I'm happy for Megan Gustafson because she is the one that really built this, mm-hmm, that built the foundation that Caitlin Clark was able to take to another level, and the other players too. I mean, a Gabby Marshall, who won't play competitive professional basketball, but she was as popular as anybody in Iowa City and probably remains so. So, you know, I'm happy to see this all work out for them. Because yes, we can root for them if we're not covering them.
Exactly.
We're human beings too.
All right. For Scott Docterman on vacation, this is Chad Lystico. Thank you, Scott. And thank you for our listeners for joining us on Legends and listeners from the Channel C studios. Talk to you next week here on the Iowa Everywhere Network.
Iowa Everywhere.